Sunday night's main event is crowdfunded. You can support the show by joining our Patreon. Just visit patreon.com/SNMEradio. Patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday night's main event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
WWE runs MSG, Kevin Owens teases a departure, and it's a week of all-out fallout. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday night's main event. We are Canada's wrestling radio show, powered by Great Lakes Beer, a fiercely independent brewery, and coming at you across the country on TSN Radio and the iHeartRadio Talk Network. My name is Jason Agnew, and 1 week removed from All Out, AEW continues to deliver on great matches and even better storylines. On tonight's show, I welcome in Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, who was there live at All Out last week, and we'll get his take on all the big debuts and yet another potential WWE departure headed on over to AEW. And with Brock Lesnar making a WWE TV appearance on SmackDown at Madison Square Garden this week, we'll chat about all the potential Roman Reigns programs with the host of our SmackDown podcast, Brad McKinnon. We'll also wish one of the greatest talkers in the history of pro wrestling a happy birthday in our Turnbuckle Trivia Contest of the Week. All of that is to come, and remember, if you're listening on the radio or via our free podcast feed and are thinking once a week isn't enough, well, friends, we have content for you each and every day on our Patreon site, and you should sign up. It's patreon.com/SNMEradio. It's only $1 a week, and it gets you a podcast delivered right to your inbox each and every day to keep you informed on the world of pro wrestling. Patreon.com/SNMEradio. Taking a break and back with Dave Meltzer right after this. You're listening to Sunday night's main event.
Only when light is combined with the dark is the universe perfect and complete. Like a hypnotizing drumbeat heard deep within the swampy shores, a bubbling kettle brews. She engages your spirit, sending ripples across the surface of your soul. Allow her sacred science and divine state of consciousness to unveil your contact point toward complete clarity. Cosmically grounded, she is all at once every element, fueling the nectar of your memory, drip by velvety drip. Ascending from the mist, Haze Mama breaks in balance while granting an alternative perception, otherwise unavailable, unless by virtue of her wondrous alchemy. Shh. Haze Mama New England IPA, available year-round for only $3.50. Great Lakes, brewed for you, Ontario.
I'm Dan the Mouth of Ransky.
And I'm Joe Aguinaldo.
And we are the old folks, two burnout wrestling fans that have been watching it since the 70s.
But now, All Elite Wrestling is here to make everything old new again.
So what better idea for a podcast to have it covered by two old crusty parts?
It's called All Elite Weekly, and you can listen to it by becoming a patron of Sunday Night's Main Event at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And you can bet we'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because we're the old folks, tough guy.
It's time!
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider. With Dave Meltzer on Sunday night's main event.
Let's dive into the news of the week. And I didn't have the chance to chat with him last week because he was at All Out. But Dave Meltzer is back on the show this week, the editor of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. Dave, so All Out, you attend live, the aftermath of this, I know you went, you watched it again. Where does this fall right now as you look at it in wrestling folklore as far as like pay-per-views have gone? Because to me, it does scream like almost a perfect show and could very well be a turning point.
You know, I mean, like, stuff like that, it's almost like you have to wait and look back to really judge it. But when I was in the building, I felt that it was, I mean, as far as a show goes, it was one of the best pay-per-view shows ever in the United States, for sure. I mean, it's hard to rank it. I mean, I watched it again, and I felt even stronger about that. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely one of the best pay-per-view shows. I thought the Young Bucks match was the best cage match I've ever seen, and easily. And one of the best tag team matches of all time. And but just with, when you throw in like the Suzuki and the Danielson and Adam Cole and the great reaction that Ruby Soho got and the quality of the matches up and down, pretty much every match but one was really good. And that match wasn't designed to be good. That match was just there. It's way up there, you know, for sure.
So let's talk about, obviously, the debuts and the reaction. There was definitely, like, you know, electricity in the air. And we'll start who one of the ones that came out first here. You know, Ruby Soho, or the former Ruby Riott, had been teasing, doing all of her viral vignettes. She does show up and has taken the name Ruby Soho and has that song. And this is something, because we know, we've heard in the past that Lars Fredriksson, the lead singer of Rancid, is actually a wrestling fan.
He's a big wrestling fan. I mean, I've seen him at shows in the Bay Area. You know, so it's not like he's just some guy who, like, will watch on TV or something. And he subscribes. I don't know if he subscribes now, but he certainly subscribed to The Observer before. So, you know, yeah, he's a big fan.
And there was contact here between Soho and Ruby Soho and Lars Fredriksson, right?
They were on a podcast together, and he brought up the idea of, why don't you use the name Ruby Soho and use the song? And she was all for it, and he said, well, I can get that taken care of in a minute. And so that was the deal, and I think that it greatly benefits her, because I think that you know, one of the things that AEW has that you know, really, I would have never thought of this as being... I would have thought of this as being a different thing. But when you look at, like, the ECW and World Class and all those promotions, Memphis and all Mid-South, when they used, like, songs that you would listen to on the radio and or songs that are popular in culture, even though, granted, most of the AEW songs are decades old.
Sure.
But they are still songs that are, you know, popular in the culture in certain ways, or recognizable in the ways that WWE music really, for the most part, is not. I think it's a big difference maker, but I don't know that I've ever seen a song that is so perfect for a wrestling character and that specific wrestling character ever. And I think that when she came out to that song, and, you know, I've seen the vignettes earlier anyway, but when she came out to that song, and with her look and everything like that, it was like, this woman looked like a superstar.
Yeah.
And I don't think she ever did in WWE. In WWE, she was just a woman on the roster.
Yep.
And she just came across like a superstar from that. And as long as she can wrestle well, and she can,
yep,
she's going to be like you know, in that promotion. I mean, Britt Baker's a superstar, and Thunder Rose is a superstar, and she's going to be a superstar too, just like them. They're going to be like the big women stars, and there'll be others that are on their way up too. But those three are going to be the big stars in that division.
So they got Ruby Soho for the former Ruby Riott, now Ruby Soho. But we did not hear the Final Countdown. This seems to be the first song that was cost prohibitive for Tony Khan to actually get for Bryan Danielson.
Yes, must have been very expensive, because that's how he says it just wasn't worth it. So and. Brian, you know, likes, you know, Fly the Valkyries anyway, because, you know, for whatever, you know, maybe likes the song Fujiwara, I'm sure, has an influence, because it was Fujiwara's song in Japan. So he had a remix done by one of his friends, and that's going to be his song, and that will be fine. But yes, they did look at Final Countdown, and it just didn't make economic sense.
So let's talk about Bryan Danielson. I mean, this was a great debut. How long was this in place for?
You know, I asked that question, and I didn't get a straight answer, so this is what I could tell you. So he left WWE at the end of April. So I can tell you that in May, he was talking with both companies, and he was debating back and forth, and he was slightly leaning towards AEW, okay? So what it came down to was the timing would be when he figured out that Tony Khan has the New Japan deal and Nick Khan does not have the New Japan deal, because that was the turning point. So, you know, whenever he figured out that WWE was not going to get the New Japan deal, if WWE got the New Japan deal, he'd have stayed with WWE. So I don't know. You know, it's kind of like, when did he probably had inside knowledge of how that was going down. But when, if you follow that story, when it became clear that AEW, you know, it may have been when you start seeing the New Japan guys in AEW, that would be the time. So it was probably, I'm going to guess, when I wrote the story, when all this, I'm going to guess June. But I don't, I mean, I asked specifically and I didn't get a date, but I'm going to say June.
You know, what's interesting about this, Dave, is there's certain people that are clear-cut to go to AEW, and a lot of people are thinking it's the better place right now. But for Daniel Bryan, it's more than just the decision, because it affects his family as well. I mean, Brie Bella has the potential to go back to WWE, and along with that, his stepfather-in-law is John Laurinaitis. So,
yeah, whose job it was to sign him and make sure he didn't go. Yeah, so it was a tough decision. this was not like Adam Cole and CM Punk where they acted like the decision was easy. And with Ruby, I mean, WWE cut her, so there was no decision to make. You know, the decision was, will AEW offer me a deal, please? And they did. But with Brian, yes, it was a very, very tough decision.
I think Thanksgiving might be a little bit awkward at the Danielson household this year.
Well, perhaps, but I don't know. You know, I mean, I guess it could be depending on the fortunes of the two companies. If we have a bunch of weeks like this last week, it probably would be kind of awkward and interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's really stellar. It's really exciting. So we got to talk about Adam Cole, though, because I have been listening to you this week, and when you revealed the story about what Adam Cole was set for in WWE, it is so clear-cut why he left.
Well, I don't know. He probably knew this, but I don't know as a fact that he knew this. I only know it as a fact that this is what it was. He was going to go either way. Mm-hmm. Like he pretty much said, like, look, his friends are there. He's not an idiot. It's like, and also he was not negative at all on WWE. But he could look and just go, like, guys who are his size are not going to get pushed on the main roster. So they wanted to push him, so their idea of pushing him was to be a heel manager. So he was going to be a heel manager for Keith Lee. They're going to turn Keith Lee heel, and it was going to be a remake of the Bobby Lashley-Leo Rush thing. That was the idea for Adam Cole. And, you know, so because they wanted to make the most use of his talking ability and his charisma, but they did not want to put him in the ring as a serious wrestling contender. So, but even if he didn't know that, I would think that it would be like, because when it became clear he was on the market, you know, Brian and I, Brian Alvarez and I, mm-hmm. talked about it, and we were just going through the thing, and it was, to me, it was one of the easier decisions. Like with Danielson, it was a difficult decision. With Adam Cole, it just seemed like if you value your career, unless they go and offer you, you know, $1.5 million a year, in which case you just take the money, which they didn't do. It's a pretty easy call to make that you're going to have a lot more chance to be a big star in AEW than you are in WWE. So, and he said, like, you know, he thought his contract was up in December, not in July, and he had already decided he was going, you know, before any of this, because you can see certain guys are not going to get a push in WWE main roster, and those guys are better off in AEW. The thing with AEW now is that they are so loaded with talent that. Mm-hmm. Unless you're somebody really, really good at this point, or just an undercard guy or something like that impresses somebody. But I don't see a lot of additions right now because they have more talent than they can utilize in their main events. So Adam was too big to pass up, but, you know, a lot of these guys that were cut that, you know, are being passed up too.
Normally I would definitely raise questions around two or maybe three, four debuts in one night being too much. But I gotta say, in this case, watching that show, I didn't feel that way with the debuts of both Danielson and Cole on the same night. To me, I thought it was a really great use of both of them.
I thought it was done great. You know, and Ruby, her debut, they always debut someone in the Casino Battle Royal anyway, so that was good. And then Suzuki was, you know, this is when he's in the country. So, you know, his thing, because he's a short-term guy, he's going to wrestle at least one more match in AEW, probably, what, Moxley and Kingston against Suzuki and Archer. You know, so it just worked out that way. I mean, they probably could have done one or two more, but it was probably, I thought it was kind of perfect the way they did it.
Yeah, perfect. Definitely the word being thrown around for All Out, which is crazy to think. You really don't hear that much. All right, let's kind of switch gears, but not really. I mean, continuing with possible debuts. So Kevin Owens this week, teasing contract status with WWE. He posts up Mount Rushmore on Twitter that harkens back to something with him and the Bucks. He writes "almost there" on Twitter and the Bucks post "there," and then he deletes his text. So what's the status here of Kevin Owens and WWE seeming unhappy from what I'm determining?
I mean, what I know is his contract's up at the end of January.
Okay.
So he'll be there through Royal Rumble. And after that, you know, I'm sure he's one of those guys that, you know, when his contract is up, he's going to look at both sides. He's got friends on one side. You know, he can get a competitive offer, I'm sure. I think he's going to do whatever he thinks is right for his family. But at the same time, you also think about fun. And the one thing is that, you know, in WWE, he's used well, but he would probably be used as well or better in AEW. So, you know, he does have a lot of leeway on his promos that most people in WWE don't have. So it's not like one of those guys who's just like, I'm sick of these scripted promos, like Moxley.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, like, the one thing with AEW, like a year and a half ago, let's say, is that a lot of these guys would go, like, what if they don't make it? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I can make this move, but what if they don't make it? It's short term, and then WWE will be mad at me, blah, blah, blah. And nobody thinks, what if they don't make it anymore? It's like, they made it. So because of that, they're a real option, and now it becomes, you know, can you get a competitive offer? And Tony Khan will make competitive offers just to key people that he wants. And we don't know if Owens is one of them, but I would suspect Owens would be one of them. So, you know, then it becomes, it's the AEW schedule is going to probably be easier than the WWE schedule going forward. And that's a factor, too. If you can get competitive money, better push, an easier schedule. And, you know, but you also have to look at AEW's getting real really loaded.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people, like when I talk of, like, you know, FTR or people like that, where it's like these guys are great, but they're not being really utilized a lot right now. It's almost, and even with two shows, it's still not the case. You've got, in the tag team division, it's so loaded, you know, that makes things pretty tough. So, and also, they don't like to do rematches, which makes things tough, because like in WWE, you can put, you know, Drew McIntyre in there with you know, Sheamus 50 times. That's not going to happen in AEW. So you kind of have, you're kind of like this feud on television in AEW. It's a lot tougher.
Yeah, it's, I mean, definitely.
Let's think about this. I mean, when FTR came to AEW, you go, oh, natural series with the Young Bucks. You know, over and over, greatest tag team feud you're ever going to see. They had one match. It's one of the best tag team matches ever. They never had another match, and they've been there for a long time now.
Well, they do come back to things, though, and we actually saw that just at All Out with the Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers, right? Like, they will come back to these things, but they just give it time. And as a viewer, Dave, it's so refreshing.
Yeah, but Young Bucks and Penn and Phoenix had several matches in AEW, you know. And also, they had the matches in AAA at the same time, so they had kind of went through it. Whereas the FTR thing, it's like, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm sure that there will become a time that they will go back to it. But sometimes, you know, I mean, best of sevens are something that can work. Three-match feuds are part of wrestling, and they really, I'm not saying they never do it. I mean, they did, you know, Omega and Christian was two, but that was also, you know, there was a reason for that, and it was not the original plan.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I feel that they have these incredible matches that they can go back to, and they don't, or if they do, it's years later.
Let's flip over and talk about Triple H. There was a heart issue this week. There was surgery. What's the status here? What happened, and where are they now with him?
I just know he's resting at home. I don't really know a lot of details on it.
It was a hereditary condition, though?
That's what they say. Hmm. I mean, that's what they say with bodybuilders. But, I mean, it may be true. I don't know that it's not. I know his family actually has really good longevity, for whatever that's worth. But, it was a hard issue. It was very serious. If it was not serious, we would not know. Yeah. And he's going to be, you know, I don't know when he's coming back or anything like that.
Well, he might not have anything to do, Dave, considering NXT seems to have been taken over by Pritchard and McMahon, and that kicks off this week. What do you expect from the new NXT?
We're going to have nicer lighting, and we're going to have a better-looking performance center. And that, you know, that's a part of the reason that the ratings are down for NXT. As far as the booking goes, I mean, they're not going to, you know, he's still going to be in charge of the booking, but there will be directions, and obviously the idea is it's more developing guys for the main roster and less, let's put on a great independent wrestling show with talent that will never make to the main roster. You know, it's like the thing, you know, is built around Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong and these guys, that the reality is we're never going to be main roster stars, as talented as they were and are. And, and you can argue that they should be. I mean, I would have brought up Undisputed Era as a group. Yeah. I think they would have done great on the main roster, but yep. WWE did not do that. So, we're going to see more Ridge Hollins and more Duke Hudsons and more of the football players and the wrestlers. And some, look, like the guy was Brutus Creed. No, Julius Creed. Julius Creed, you know, who obviously very green, and he debuted. You know, they're very, very high on him in the thing. And then, you know, and Bronson Rex Steiner is going to be Rex Steiner.
Yeah, Rex Steiner, you know, Gunnar Harland. Parker Bardot is going to be Gunnar Harland.
I want to make clear, I have not heard as good things about him. But he's got a great look.
Yes,
he's,
Brock Lesnar.
6'4", 305, looks like Brock Lesnar, yeah. So he's got that going for him. But, Rick Steiner's son, I've heard people just rave about. Mm. He's a great athlete, too, so. I think that we'll have a higher quality of all-around athlete, but a lower quality of professional wrestler, because you're going to have guys that they are developing that are going to be very green, as opposed to these bringing in guys that were 15 years experience who were super workers to take them away from Ring of Honor, which was like the old goal of NXT.
Before we go, Dave, tomorrow night, Raw announced Randy Orton versus Bobby Lashley. I was under the impression that this is going to be the main event at the next pay-per-view. I guess it still could be, but any rationale with just putting this on tomorrow? Will it be a schmoz, probably?
Well, I think even more than that is they spent, it felt like an hour and a half on that tag team turmoil thing. The whole show last week was to build up the match with Orton and Matt Riddle against
Bobby Lashley,
and Bobby
MVP,
Lashley
yeah.
for the tag team title. They announced it. That was the whole thing. And then they just switched it. And, you know, obviously, there's not a question what it is. It's AEW beat Raw. You know, Dynamite beat Raw in the rings for the first time ever this week. Barely, but they did. And I knew, you know, there were so many internal reactions to that. It's not even funny. And one of them was, you know, they can't have it happen this week. And it probably won't, because a lot of it was a series of things. The Raw rating was a good rating, all things considered. But Dynamite had Adam Cole and Bryan Danielson's debut, and Punk is still new. I don't expect that Dynamite is going to be doing .53s on a regular basis. But, you know, years ago when they had Vince McMahon always had that thing, and one of the reasons like he did all that stockpiling of talent was that he never wanted to leave that little crack in the door open and have another WCW situation. And he did leave the crack open on the door, and I'm not saying this is going to be another WCW situation, but AEW is the one with momentum. And the other thing, which WWE will never acknowledge, is that AEW is producing the much better product. WWE does still have an edge with teenagers and kids. WWE has a huge edge with women. AEW has an edge with men right now. They're dueling evenly, but I think AEW will surpass them with men, and was way ahead this week. And so that's, that's kind of like the thing. And they also know it's football season, and that cuts into Raw ratings. So if AEW presents some big shows, I mean, they can win again. I don't see them winning week every week, But also a year from now, you know, that, you know, it's like with WCW and WWF when they first did the Raw thing. It was kind of would go back and forth and back and forth. And then all of a sudden, WCW got hot, got a few new guys, and they won every single week. And if, you know, I mean, the key guys, the Roman Reigns, those kind of guys, I don't see going. But, you know, if they get a few more guys, you know, I mean, look, I expect it from this point forward. It's a dogfight. And Vince didn't want that dogfight, and NXT was there to stop it. And it's an amazing story when you look at it because, you know, it is only it's less than two full years of television because the two-year anniversary show is a couple weeks away. So just under 2 years, and they're already there at a point where, you know, what were we thinking, 5 years maybe? So it speaks volumes for AEW.
It's extremely exciting. We follow along each and every week. Dave, we've kept you for long this week, but before we go, what is coming up in the Observer this week? Highlights.
You know, whatever the news is, there's, you know, I mean, coverage of the Ring of Honor show tonight, obviously, and, you know, all of the different, if, you know, if there are more things to break, and I expect that they will. And also, I think I'm going to go through comparing the market-by-market interest in All Out versus SummerSlam, because one of the things that I, you know, when I was going through this is that from a general public standpoint in the U.S., All Out had more interest than SummerSlam. It beat it head-to-head in movie theaters. It beat it in Google searches. I mean, you can't compare pay-per-view numbers because SummerSlam's not on pay-per-view, but All Out did do the record pay-per-view by far for AEW, almost, 40% plus above their old record. And when I was looking at, like, well, what had more interest, and luckily with Google searches, you really can nail that. And it's neck and neck. So, and, you know, SummerSlam, granted, it's not WrestleMania, but this SummerSlam was the biggest SummerSlam as far as interest in WWE in years because of the stadium and bringing back Cena and Goldberg. So this was not just some run-of-the-mill show against an AEW show. This was a huge WWE show against a huge AEW show, and well, you know, I thought it would be close, but when I actually looked up the numbers and I saw that AEW was ahead, that to me, that was actually more impressive than the ratings thing, because we're talking about with the ratings, it's a super AEW show against a normal WWE. This is a super WWE versus a super AEW, and I'm just curious, it's just, you know, in like what, where, which company's stronger in what markets. So I am going to do that market research.
Fantastic, Dave. Look forward to that and everything that you got in the Observer each and every week. We'll get an update next week right here, same time, same place. Sound good?
Great.
Love it.
Have a great week.
You too. Dave Meltzer, WrestlingObserver.com is, of course, where you can find all his fine work. Got to take a break. Come back. Hey, let's do a birthday turnbuckle trivia next. And then Brad the Dad from the Smack Daddies will join me to chat about this fun angle between Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns on SmackDown, and Paul Heyman is right in the middle. Maybe we'll learn a little bit more about Paul when we come back. That's next on Sunday night's Main Event.
If you like Dave Meltzer interview segments, you'll love WrestlingObserver.com. WrestlingObserver.com is your place for the latest pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Subscribers have access to hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter, plus daily podcasts, including a library of over 9,000 shows dating back to 2005. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
It's time for everyone's favorite game show.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what.
Go one-on-one and get it done. Sunday night's Main Event presents...
Everybody hands go up!
Turnbuckle Trivia.
And they stay there! And they say yeah! And they stay there!
It is Turnbuckle Trivia time here on Sunday night's Main Event. A couple savvy patron veterans playing the game today. You may think this voice is K. Trevor Wilson, but it is not, although he does share the name Wilson. Kyle Wilson from West Virginia. How are you, pal?
Doing great, Jake.
He's a voice double, I swear. You are playing against Henry from Las Vegas. How are you, Henry?
Very good, very good.
All right, guys, you know how the game is played. Five questions each. We're going to see who's getting the win. Listen, Friday Night SmackDown had a real focus on the gentleman that we're going to talk about today. It also happens to be his birthday on September the 11th, and that is Paul Heyman. Happy birthday, Paul Heyman. Let's get into playing some trivia. And remember about this gentleman who is definitely one of the best mouthpieces in wrestling history. Kyle, your player one. Henry, your player two. And here we go, Kyle. Paul Heyman got into the wrestling industry, into the business, by doing what?
He was a photographer.
He was a photographer. Very good. Henry, to you, when he was a wrestling manager in the late 80s, what name did Heyman take?
Paul E. Dangerously.
That is also correct. Very good. All right, Kyle, let's get into pop culture here. Paul took that name due to the movie Johnny Dangerously and his slight resemblance to the lead character, as played by whom?
I have no idea.
Ooh, you want to take a guess on who you think Paul Heyman might have looked like back in the day?
He looks like Paul Giamatti now, but I don't know back in the day.
Well, back in the day, someone thought he looked like Michael Keaton in Johnny Dangerously, and that is why he took that name, because Michael Keaton starred in Johnny Dangerously. Henry, over to you. During his time as the Paul E. Dangerously character, what was his favorite foreign object?
His brick cell phone.
Yes, his brick cell phone. Nowadays, a cell phone, not much a weapon. Back in the day, though, that'll knock you out. Kyle, over to you. When Heyman began to promote ECW, what was the original name of that promotion?
Eastern Championship Wrestling.
That is correct. The E stood for Eastern, and he changed it. Henry, a little bit more difficult here. A blast from the past as far as a name goes. What is the name of the promoter that was in power and became a partner with Paul Heyman in ECW? I guess Paul became his partner. Who was it?
I have two guesses.
Okay, you got to choose one of the two, Henry.
Man, okay, Todd Gordon.
That is correct. Who's the other one that you were thinking?
I was thinking Eddie Gilbert.
No. Oh, right, because he was booking at the time, I think. But Todd Gordon, the correct answer. Very good, Henry. All right, Kyle, back to you. On April 13th, 1997, ECW put on their first traditional pay-per-view event. What was it called?
Barely Legal.
Yes, it was Barely Legal. Very good. Henry, over to you. Okay, here we go. In 2001... Heyman debuted on WWE TV as a commentator, but would then go on to form an ECW stable. It's one of my most favorite moments in WWE when all those guys turn, but it was short-lived because the angle was quickly diluted when he combined with Stephanie McMahon. What is the name of that duo's faction?
Oh, my God.
Stephanie and Paul together formed with their people... You're out there, Henry. Time expires on you. The Alliance is how they ruined that angle. All right, Kyle, you can get right back in this. It's 3-3 right now, so here we go. To take the lead, Heyman began to manage Brock Lesnar. With Heyman at his side, who did Lesnar beat at SummerSlam 2002 to become the youngest, at the time, WWE champion?
The former youngest, The Rock.
Yes, very good, Kyle. Okay, Henry, for the tie, to go to a tiebreaker, Heyman would turn on Lesnar at Survivor Series 2002 and align himself with whom?
I forgot. I'm totally off.
I guess...
CM Punk.
Oh, no. Well before CM Punk 2002. The correct answer, The Big Show, was the correct answer. And a come-from-behind victory from Kyle in West Virginia. Congratulations, Kyle. A T-shirt from ballergear.ca is headed over to you via the mail. We'll get it to you quick. Thanks for playing, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Good
game. Thank you. That was fun.
And a happy birthday once again to Paul Heyman, 56 years old as of yesterday. And I tell you, I will say, out of what happened on SmackDown, I am very curious about this Brock and Reigns' angle and where Paul will fall into the mix thereafter. And that is a lot of what we're going to be talking about next when Brad the Dad from the Smack Daddies podcast will be joining me. You are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. Stick with us. More after this.
I'm Manny Arsenal, and I'm with Baller Gear.
I'm Ricky Collins-Jr., and I'm with Baller Gear.
Hi, I'm Chad Jeter, and I'm with Baller Gear.
Baller Gear is the official home for the CG brand, 39 Sack, Root Demons, Shaq One, Manny Show, Run Happy Collections, and more. We're also the newest home for the official tees from SNME Radio. Check out the selection of tees today at ballergear.ca. Are you ready?
Welcome back. Final bit here on Sunday Night's Main Event. I'm very happy to have this gentleman on. He covers SmackDown for us each and every week on our Patreon podcast. So sign up at patreon.com/SNMEradio and you each and every week will hear the East Coast Dads, now known as the Smack Daddies. And I mean, Brad McKinnon, known as Brad the Dad affectionately by all of our patrons. It was, I thought, a big week on SmackDown this week.
Yeah, it was one of the better episodes of SmackDown. Greg and I, during the podcast, I think we said it was probably the best episode we've had the pleasure of doing. I mean, Jason, it's incredible how much happened that week and the surprises that they put into the show. I mean, we knew Brock was coming, but yep. The demon coming out at the end, I mean, you can't ask for more than that.
Okay, well, you can, and we'll get there, because I don't know how much I cared for that. I want to talk about this SmackDown, though, as a whole, because there's a few things here, though, Brad. Like, if I was playing a drinking game of how many times performers and announcers said MSG or Madison Square Garden, like, I wouldn't just be drunk by the end of the show. I would have been dead. WWE just smacking us over the head, pardon the pun, with SmackDown, just letting us know that they're an MSG. I found that a bit much. And secondly, what I also found a bit much is, yes, we were at the anniversary of 9/11. And I think that there is time to be taken out to remember those events. But I thought it was gross how WWE promoted the fact that they were the first ones back at it, and you can go on the WWE Network and watch that 9/11 special from 2001 on their network and rah, rah, rah us. Like, I was disgusted by the end of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't watch the special then, Jason, because it'll make you even more uncomfortable. It's actually on YouTube as well, which is where I watched it last night. It's a great special. And listen, if they had done the one piece off the top and they had had a couple of interstitials throughout the thing where we had the different videos, maybe one or two, but it got to the point, and maybe that's because we're Canadians and this wasn't as, it was a big deal here in Canada. I mean, the whole world shut down.
Yeah.
But it just got to the point where I was like, okay, I get it. You guys did a great thing and, you know, good for you. You've been supporting a lot of good charities, but it's like that with everything with WWE,
right?
Whether it's Connor's Cure or whatever. It just, they hit you over the head with it. And you talk about more is more when it comes to content. I mean, more is more when it comes to promoting their good works. And you know what? Good for them for doing the good works, but you don't need a victory lap every time, a gold star every time you do something good in the world.
You got to let other people brag for you. You don't brag about you. It's like giving yourself a nickname. You don't give yourself a nickname. Okay, you kind of did. But you got to let other people tell the world about how good you are. Don't tell them yourself. It's more effective that way. And WWE has a real knack of just being so self-promotional. It's really gross. I found that really distasteful. But I will say that the episode itself and the whole Roman and Brock confrontation that they did, playing instead of Monkey in the middle, Heyman in the middle, I thought this whole thing was great. Brad, though, coming out of this, I really feel like Heyman gets screwed by both guys, don't you?
I have a funny feeling he's going to end up on the winning side. I think we're going the other direction. We're going to assume that Brock's in for Saudi blood money because that's what Brock's about.
Okay.
That he's a mercenary. And I think Paul Heyman's going to cost Brock, and which will set up a match further down the line, that this is just a little thing to get through. I mean, the only thing that's worse than that is what they're going to do, Jason, with Finn Balor, who is really an afterthought.
Okay, hold on. I keep pushing that off. I want to spend some time on it. But how about this? Roman and Brock, to me, I'm kind of thinking that He sides with one of them, so he's already betrayed the first guy. He sides with the second one. I don't know which way this is going to go. And then the second guy also turns on him, so Paul is left alone. But that means it's time for Paul to find the next big thing. And when I say that to you, because I didn't throw this to you beforehand, who do you think the next big thing can be? Who is Paul assigned with next? Because I've got a few guys that hit me right away.
Ridge Hollins is who jumps into my head from NXT.
Really?
He is so bad in the ring, but I can't imagine WWE not going, this is our guy. Because Jason, he is exactly what the new NXT is going to be all about, is big, giant, hulking human beings who look like they've got about 50 pounds of muscle more than their frame can handle. And don't get me wrong, I think someday Ridge could be a pretty decent wrestler, maybe even a big star, but they're going to push him. Boy, is he Bobby Lashley 2.0? Bobby Lashley is a great example. Now we all think of him as a major superstar, but when they pushed him at the beginning, no, it didn't work, Jason.
Well, I think that there's a few people that fall into that. We also have Rick Steiner's kid, who's now taken on the name Rex Steiner as a possibility. Parker Bordeaux, who looks like Brock 2.0. He's now named Gunnar Harland. I don't know what their obsessiveness with the name Gunnar is. But actually, what I wanted to throw at you, Brad, and everyone out there that's listening right now, is Gable Stevenson. The new Olympian that WWE assigned, who does not have much experience, but I mean, if you want someone to get an Olympian over and brag about him, that sounds like Paul Heyman to me.
Yeah, it's just, I hope they don't screw him up. I would much rather send him someplace, cough, your developmental territory, and let him learn for 6 months, 2 years. They did that with Angle. I mean, Angle was one of the fastest learners in time, but he still had somewhere where he practices before. I just think about, I mean, I think it's Mouth that he said it this week on All Elite Weekly, which, by the way, is one of those exclusive podcasts that you get if you're a patron. I mean, Mouth talked about how he hates watching people learn as they go. And for me, that's my big thing. I don't want to watch this guy be like The Miz and watch him grow. I want to see at least a semi-finished product before he gets to television. And Vince is hellbound and determined to put these big monsters on. I look at somebody like Commander Aziz, who I see every week on SmackDown. I think the guy is tremendous for where he is in his career, but they've pushed him far too fast on the television. Almost is the other one. You get the pleasure of watching Almost in tag matches. Can you imagine if his tag team partner wasn't AJ Styles and we had to see him wrestle a normal tag match where he wrestled 50-50 with his partner? That'd be painful.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to watch in the main roster, but I think NXT is going to feel a lot more developmental than it has in the past, and I think we could be watching these guys there. Granted, that goes against my theory of Paul Heyman with Gable Stevenson. Nonetheless, okay, let's talk Finn Balor. I had forgotten this guy existed because I was so excited about Roman and Brock, and all of a sudden at the end of this Madison Square Garden show, we have the Demon entrance, and the Demon come out. This was the biggest waste of the Demon and the spectacular entrance that people haven't seen in years and are going to be super hot for. This came out of nowhere, and it went nowhere. And ultimately, it's going to lead to Roman Reigns defeating the Demon, at least I think, or maybe not. What do you think?
Oh, I wish I could argue with you because it would be a better podcast. But no, the reality is that he's gonna win because Roman is going to have to lose his title to somebody. And you thinking about a next person is a logical thing. That would be what a sane person would do. Now, Vince, I think, is going to either give this to The Rock or Brock at some point, whether The Rock comes back for a WrestleMania or it's Brock at a WrestleMania. Somebody is going to end Roman's big run, but it's certainly not going to be Finn. And listen, I have a crazy theory for you, Jason. I know that's usually Mark's thing, but I don't think he's going to lose the title until he passes CM Punk's modern reign. He's going to pass the record that CM Punk has so that Roman Reigns becomes the longest reigning modern champion. He's going nowhere near the Bruno 8-year record, sure, but he can pass Punk. And then once he passes Punk, then Vince never has to say that name ever again.
That's fascinating. I never thought about that, but you know what? Don't put it by him. For sure, that's not a bad theory at all. Someone that they also integrated into the mix at the top of the card and teased him being around Paul Heyman is Big E pushing the cash in. Listen, when he cut that promo on SmackDown, though, he mentioned the name Bobby Lashley, and it was dead silence to that crowd. Big E was at least not over to the New York MSG crowd.
I think that the issue at hand is he's over to a lot of people, but maybe not that area. I think if they want to cash him in, he has to cash in somewhere in the South where he's, you can see it in Florida and Georgia when they tour around. He is much more, and so is the New Day. They're much more over in those markets. I'm terrified though. I don't think he's going to try cashing in on Roman. I have a funny feeling he's going to go over to Raw, and I don't want to see him on Raw, mostly because I don't watch Raw every week. I did this week just so that I could commiserate with you. But my Raw viewing is listening to you, and then after that, fast forwarding through most of it and watching the things that you either think are ridiculous or are good. If he goes over to Raw, I'll never see Big E again. And then the other issue is I don't necessarily want him back with the New Day. I want them separate for a while. I really have enjoyed those two acts separate. And I also think that it's okay not to just to have one African-American champion. I would love to see both those titles on African-American gentlemen, not because of their race or any of that stuff, but just because I think Big E is probably, like, he could be your next big star. But I don't know if Vince sees him that way, which is a huge mistake because Big E is over. I don't know if you watched the commercials for SmackDown, but I caught up the live and was watching the commercials. The commercial he did for the no vaping thing was very impressive. It was, he can do a good PSA, which means he could be a John Cena level spokesperson. And that's really what the company needs, is they need a new John Cena. And yeah, it just feels like they're pushing Big E like 5 years too late to be that character, but he could be that guy, Jason.
Let's talk about Becky Lynch. To me, this character, Becky playing heel, feels like the girl that's trying too hard to get a boy. But the boy is wrestling fans. She's rolling out big-time Becks. You can be a fan or you can be the man. It feels like, you know, you mentioned The Miz earlier. It feels like she's playing wrestler, as we always critique The Miz of doing. She's playing wrestler. She's not natural in this role. It feels like she's pushing a boulder up a mountain because everyone wants to cheer this woman. And it's like, I'll use another analogy, a salmon swimming upstream.
Well, and she's the, you know, this great figure that's coming back from giving birth, from getting herself back into ring shape after giving birth and creating a human life. And that's not the kind of person you want to boo.
No.
I mean, I'm thinking about the tennis star, Serena Williams. Like, nobody boos Serena Williams. She had a near-death experience with her pregnancy. Everybody's hoping for her to win one more championship. And with Becky, she's doing like a Connor. She reminds me of Connor, the MMA fighter. It's a light version of him. Like, she's trying. She even wore that stupid coat that she stole from her husband this week. Like, Jason, why is she trying to be something that she's not?
There's a time and place for this, and this is something that Becky Lynch has asked for. And sure, down the line, when people get tired of Becky Lynch, the babyface, they can do this. But right now, I mean, yeah, to me, I said it right when she came out at Mania, it would have been a much better program if we got the big pop for Becky's entrance. And then when she asked for the title fight, you just had Bianca Belair say, uh-uh. And it's her catchphrase. She doesn't do the title swap. She's unwilling to do the match. Becky takes her out there, so you get all the big pops. You have Bianca as an incredible heel, which she has got the chops for sure. And Becky is your babyface. The fans want to cheer her, and this is comparable to when Stone Cold turned heel years ago.
Well, it's worse than that, because with Stone Cold, it was they were trying something new with the character, and with Becky, like, they know from the Stone Cold experiment this wasn't going to work. So they can't even learn from their own mistakes. And the biggest thing is, you're very right. It's the wrong, they're the wrong characters. So Becky should be the face because we want to cheer her. And Bianca's, when she was in NXT, when you were watching NXT and so was I, she was a phenomenal heel. And I think she's a better heel than she is a face.
I agree with you. I agree with you completely. Speaking of heels, I will say the one real kick that I got on SmackDown was the use of Trey Young. I love the fact that they took advantage of a sports celebrity from the other team, brought in a heel sports celebrity. This guy at ringside knew what he was doing. You could tell he was a fan. You could tell he was selling everything. This is the exact opposite of what they did with Logan Paul, who they just didn't know how to book as a heel. They booked this guy as a heel. I love this. I thought it was excellent. I thought it was well put together. I thought it enraged everyone in New York. It was perfect.
Well, and even better than that, do you know when the next time would be a logical time to use him is, Jason.
When's that?
New Year's Day, they are back in Georgia.
Oh, so he'd be a giant baby face.
Right. And that's actually the new pay-per-view that they booked that's going to be, because New Year's Day is a Sunday.
Right.
It's on the pay-per-view. Is WWE has booked a pay-per-view for that night, and it would be so perfect to have that pay-per-view there and have him come out. He would get the exact opposite reaction, and he could turn on the heels that he was helping. He could turn on Sami Zayn, clock him. But who knows? Maybe by then Sami Zayn has gone off to start some sort of orphanage in Mexico, and El Generico is back from the dead.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? What did you think about the injury they did with Edge?
Oh, I think on the podcast, I was pretty positive, but then after like watching some of the online stuff where they clearly were playing up that this was real, it made me really uncomfortable, and I don't know if it was in a good way. I don't want to see him get crippled in the ring. In fact, whenever I watch him or Christian or Daniel Bryan, there's a little danger in the back of my head. I'm worried that one of my favorite wrestlers, a person, is going to end up in a wheelchair or end up worse.
Yep.
I don't want to see my hero crippled.
No, we've seen it too many times before with other performers. I don't even like the tease of this. I didn't think it was good at all. Brad, before we go, and we're going to do a lot more for patrons. You're going to hear Brad and I chat about some AEW stuff and the All Out Fallout. But before we go, for all of our listeners on the free podcast and for the radio listeners, NXT is turning to NXT 2.0 this week. What do you expect? And are you looking forward to the paint job? The literal fresh coat of paint that they're doing with the logo and more for NXT.
So here's the thing I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to not necessarily watching all the matches or any of that, but I'm looking forward to the fact that an NXT superstar will progress through that show. And then when they graduate and go up to the main roster, because that's what it is again, you're moving from developmental to the main roster, you'll be treated with dignity and respect because Vince McMahon will have created you. And then he will recast you on the main roster and you won't have these weird transitions, which just depress me as an NXT fan. I'm so happy Adam Cole left and went to AEW because now he's going to be used properly. I look at some of the characters that have come up and all I can think about is Ricochet every time is poor Ricochet. If he was anywhere else in the world, Jason, I mean, you talk about it every week on the podcast. He's a main eventer waiting to happen yet because he's not quite the right height. And the right size, he is always going to just be an afterthought in WWE. So I'm looking forward to some continuity between those two brands. And I don't know, if we get zany skits like we did with the Bachelor Party, and that's part of the new NXT, I'd be happy with that too.
Oh boy, you're always the voice of positivity, Brad. Well, listen, we got to say goodbye for this week. Next week here on the show, Meltzer will stop by again. And along with that, we'll have one of our boys from the NXT Talk podcast to recap what this new paint job on NXT 2.0 does look and feel like and review that show. So join us next week wherever you're listening now. We're going to be back here next week for Each and Every Day You Want podcast. It's patreon.com/SNME Radio. For patrons, Brad and I talking NXT next. For all the rest of you, we'll talk to you next week. Same time, same place, Sunday night's main event. Don't you dare miss it.
Sunday night's main event is crowdfunded. You can support the show by joining our Patreon. Just visit patreon.com/SNME Radio. patreon.com/SNME Radio.